A show of unity and support. Western leaders announced new plans to punish Russia for its war in Ukraine, including sanctions and more military aid for Kyiv. NATO will also send additional battle groups to Eastern Europe. But will it be enough to deter President Vladimir Putin? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Fully Batibo. The war in Ukraine has now entered its second month. The leaders of NATO, the European Union and the Group of Seven Nations have met in Brussels, condemning Russia's actions and announcing more sanctions. The 30 NATO allies said Russia's invasion of Ukraine was the gravest threat to Euro-Atlantic security in decades. Their aim was to show solidarity to Ukraine, but only up to a point. Many have been willing to supply weapons, but the alliance has also made clear it won't become directly involved. U.S. President Joe Biden also committed more humanitarian assistance to Ukraine.
NATO has never, never been more united than it is today. Putin is getting exactly the opposite what he intended to have as a consequence of going into Ukraine. We've built that same unity with the European Union. And with the leading democracies of the G7.
While NATO agreed more support for Ukraine, it also announced it would deploy additional battalions to protect what it called its eastern border.
So we are resetting NATO's deterrence and defense for the long term, with more troops, with more air assets and more maritime capabilities. We have already increased our presence in the east. And today we decided on four new battle groups, and the leaders agreed to task our military commanders to provide options for a long-term reset of our presence, our military posture in the eastern part of the alliance and across the whole alliance.
As the NATO summit got underway in Brussels, leaders heard a call for more help from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who addressed the gathering virtually.
Ми просто хочемо врятувати наших людей.
Ukraine never wanted to fight. We just want to survive. We are entitled to live like other countries. I am not blaming NATO. It's not your missiles that are ruining our country. This morning, phosphorus bombs have been used and adults and children have been killed. The alliance can still save our country by giving us those weapons. We never thought NATO can be afraid of Russia. I am sure you understand Russia will not stop in Ukraine and will go further against the eastern members of NATO, the Baltic states and Poland. Ukraine was just asking for 1% of your tanks, either to give us or to sell them to us. But we haven't had any response. This is the worst that can happen during a war.
Well, let's take a look at what the West has done so far to support Ukraine. The U.S. and its allies have delivered weapons and financial aid to Ukraine, including anti-aircraft systems, anti-armor systems and drones. They've also shared intelligence. They've imposed sweeping economic sanctions against Russia, and the U.S. has announced additional measures against more than 400 individuals and entities. Billions of dollars worth of humanitarian aid have also been flowing in to assist people inside Ukraine. Washington says it'll provide $1 billion more in humanitarian assistance. But President Zelensky's repeated requests for a no-fly zone over Ukraine have pretty much been ignored. Well, let's now bring in our guests for today's Inside Story. From Odessa in Ukraine, we are joined by Hanna Shaletz. She's the Director of Security Programs with Ukrainian PRISM. That's a Ukrainian foreign policy and security think tank. Vladimir Sotsnikov joins us from Moscow. He's the director of the consultancy Russia East-West Center for Strategic Studies and Analysis. And from Washington, D.C., we're joined by Nigel Gould-Davis. He's a senior fellow for Russia and Eurasia with the International Institute for Strategic Studies and a former UK ambassador to Belarus. Welcome to you all. Thank you very much for being with us on Inside Story. Mr. Sotsnikov in Moscow, let me start with you, if I can. Western leaders have been touting unity in their response to Russia, announcing new military aid to Ukraine and new sanctions against Moscow. Will this be enough to deter President Vladimir Putin?
Well, actually, I think that the results of these three very important for Western leaders meetings in Brussels According to the opinion of Western leaders, showed the unusual unity against Russia. But my point is that even the growing up of or the rapid increasing of the NATO forces in on the borders of on the western borders with Russia and near side Ukraine, and the very much harsh economic sanctions will only speed up the hard will of Russian President Vladimir Putin. And he already announced a very unexpected solution to pay in rubles for the gas supplies in to European countries, to actually to European community countries, European Union countries. So I think that eventually, I think that at the end of the day, it might be looking like a lose position, then alternatively that a win position, because actually Russia will find, at my opinion, some asymmetric measures, like suggesting paying in rubles.
Interesting. Anna Shaletz, your thoughts. Are Ukrainian leaders, how are they viewing this additional support from the West? Does it go far enough?
First of all, I would like to clarify that sounds really odd when we are seeing that additional battle group that NATO is going to settle in Slovakia or in Romania is just on the Russian borders, considering is that it is at least 1,005 kilometers from Romania to the nearest Russian territory. So that is definitely the huge exaggeration, and that's something what Vladimir Putin manipulated a lot in his speeches. But at the same time, when we are speaking about how Ukraine reacted to the yesterday decisions, first of all, for us, definitely it's been important that the unity continued within the countries, both in the European Union and in NATO. We understand that NATO, first of all, is trying to protect their territory. That's why the battle groups are, first of all, to protect and to defend the NATO member states. But still, it was very nice to hear in the statements, at the joint statement and the individual statements, both the not only what NATO cannot do, but what NATO is doing and what NATO can do for Ukraine, including talks about additional ammunition for anti-tank and anti-missile. That is additional support in terms of cybersecurity, biological security, and chemical weapons security. That is the new threats that are now sounding from Moscow. And that is definitely additional commitments in terms of the security and humanitarian aid for Ukraine. We understand that the biggest part of the agreements were not public and they were not announced. And that is really important because that is very sensitive information. And if we would like to be safe, we would not tell that five new tanks would cross the Polish border, for example, because
indeed,
they're immediately becoming the target.
Indeed, we did not hear the details about what additional weapons were going to be supplied. Mr. Nigel Gould-Davis in Washington, D.C., Western leaders are clearly faced with a delicate balance between influencing the course of the conflict in Ukraine and avoiding dangerous escalation beyond it. The show of Western unity that we saw in Brussels on Thursday, a very strong symbol, no doubt. But how practical is it in terms of security, both defense and energy security?
Yes, and you're right to mention the energy dimension as well, because let's remember that the meetings that have taken place this week are not only of NATO, but the EU and the G7 too. And this indeed is a, I would say, unprecedented display of collective Western unity. I mean, put this into context. This is really the third time since the Second World War that we've seen Russian, or during the Cold War, it was Soviet overreach and a threat to Europe, invoking a collective Western response. The first time was the late 1940s, the second was the late 1970s, and the third and most emphatic is today. But yes, of course, there are dilemmas always and balances to be struck in the way that this is done. I think it's important for the West now, and this was one of the main purposes of these meetings, to demonstrate continued resolve and that Western unity won't diminish or weaken. And I know there are expectations or hopes on the Russian side that the Western position will gradually soften, as it has in the past.
And that is really the question, is it? How hard will it be to maintain this unity if the conflict becomes more brutal? We're already starting to see some cracks within the European Union with countries that want more sanctions imposed against Russia and those like Germany who thinks that the sanctions have gone far enough. How long how long can they maintain this unity?
Yes. Well, it's the next sanctions measures that could be taken, particularly against Russian energy, are the harder ones and the more costly ones. And I think that the West is doing the right things in preparing the ground for that. So one of the most interesting announcements yesterday was that Germany would, in effect, wean itself off dependence on Russian gas by 2024. It's painful and difficult to do, but they are preparing the way for a post-Russian energy future. Already we've seen, in this and on other aspects of this whole issue, Germany moving in ways that no one really predicted. I would say it's less a matter of cracks at this moment and more a matter of the unequal speed of progress. But again, overall, I think it's been a very impressive display of unity and continues what I think has been a highly effective diplomatic campaign going really back to last October on the part of the United States.
Mr. Sotnikov, your thoughts about this. Is the war weakening President Putin's position in Russia as the West hopes it is?
First of all, I would like to actually take into notice the remark by Anna on the other side. I didn't mean actually the Russian borders just right near the Western countries like Poland. Anyway, ultimately, this is the western borders of Russia. It's not like that Russia actually is in Ukrainian territory and it is claiming that this is a Russian territory. It's not like that. Secondly, I would like to have my remark on the Nigel's remarks, actually. I think that in terms of energy, it's rather difficult immediately or just even by the year of 2024 to substitute the Russian supplies. Because it seems to me that even Ursula von der Leyen actually said that there will be an organized central system of concluding the contracts. It's a rather rigid system, actually, which is functioning already, and it's difficult to understand how it will function in the future and how successful will be attempts to have the adequate volume supplies from Qatar, Norway, or from any other country which would like to supply the LNG. As regards... can you repeat your question actually again?
My question was about whether the war in Ukraine was weakening President Putin's position in Russia, because ultimately this is what the West is looking for.
Okay, probably I might as well disappoint you, but it's very unusual that the support of Russian president's action in Russia, it's more than 70%. So you cannot imagine it, because nobody actually imagined these figures when a month ago this special operation started. So I don't think that this special operation, even the economic hardships which are looming, not existing, but looming in the prospective time, will loosen, to my mind, weakening the position of President Putin.
Hannah, your response to that, your thoughts about what Vladimir just said there. He says that President Putin's position within Russia is only actually getting stronger as a result of this operation.
Yes, definitely. We also have this information, and it can be easily supported not only by the sociological surveys, but the actual situation, how many of the Russians supported the war against Ukraine. And plenty of the international journalists have been trying to get interviews on the streets in different cities around Russia, asking about this war and Russian aggression. And we really been shocked by the positive attitude. People didn't feel anything negative about bombing of Kharkiv or of Mariupol. And that really scared us. Because previously in the West, talking with a lot of diplomats, I heard for many years that, okay, let's just wait, Mr. Putin would step down or retire, and situation would change in the Russian Federation. We also wanted to be the same optimistic, but now seeing the strong support of the military actions, not just of the policy inside of the country, it's really shocking, and there is no the same hope that just the retirement of Russian president can actually change the attitude of the Russian Federation against all other neighbors of this country.
Well, let's take a closer look now at the situation on the ground a month on from the Russian invasion of Ukraine. The areas in red are held by Russian forces and their separatist allies. Their military advance has largely stalled. Ukrainian forces in besieged Mariupol are holding out, and Ukraine says it successfully pushed back Russian advances with counteroffensives on the outskirts of the capital, Kyiv. Nigel, what is your sense of where the conflict stands and where it's headed, and how long can Ukraine hold out with this additional support that's been provided by NATO and other Western countries?
Very little about this war has gone in the way that Russia hoped or intended, and it's faced a series of setbacks that have exposed weaknesses in its political assumptions about the situation Ukraine, and about the performance, the logistics, the communications and the tactics of Russian military forces themselves. That said, Russia still has a very large number of forces it could continue to commit to this. But it knows, Russia knows, that as the flow of Western support comes into Ukraine, it will become harder rather than easier still for Russia. And all the reports that we have about the morale and the motivation on the two sides in the field suggest that Ukraine's forces are far more disciplined and far more motivated in this fight. So things are looking very difficult for Russia, which is precisely why there is the fear in the West of a potential escalation. Mm-hmm. And it's really escalation scenarios that are the greatest worry here. And we've heard in the last few days serious and credible worries from Western sources that Russia might be contemplating the use of chemical or even more dangerous weapons. And right. There are steps being taken to protect NATO against that.
Right.
The other aspect, just to go back to an earlier part of the discussion, the economic costs that Russia is facing on the home front. So it's facing military costs in the field, economic costs at home. And these sanctions, they are only just beginning to do their work. The Russian economy, in every respect, faces unprecedented and rapid difficulties in coming months. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens to Russian public opinion as those consequences work themselves out in Russia. And not just the effect on Russian public opinion, right, but in elites as well. When I watch Russian television and watch these curated sort of footage of Russian elites, I see lots of unhappy and worried faces. And I think those around Putin are privately very alarmed and very unhappy about the consequences of this war.
Vladimir, in Moscow, is the war going the way Russia wants? Does Russia see this war as being a winnable one?
Well, what I would like to say in this regard, that probably I'm not a military expert. I'm not connected with General Chief of Staff. I can only assume. I assume that at first, the operation, the special operation, could be regarded as the strike, which is lightning strike. But then probably the strategy which Russian military planners have in their mind had changed, because it's understandable that when the actual war is waged on the ground, so that means that there will be victims on both sides, on the Ukrainian side and the Russian side. And another part of this strategy probably is to avoid unnecessary civic casualties. So Russia actually is, to my mind, is trying to do this at least. So I think that
the facts on the ground show differently, unfortunately, as far as civilian casualties.
I don't know, actually. I cannot say definitely, because unfortunately I cannot see a lot of videos. You know, we have blocked YouTube and other Western gadgets. I mean, right. But I can only assume that this strategy is working, that to avoid as much civilian casualties as Russia can do.
Hannah,
but military strategy.
Yes, Hannah, if you want to jump in, go ahead.
I really wanted to jump. I understand that YouTube is blocked, but I will be glad to send through the messages some videos. And the problem is exactly the opposite, that the original operation being definitely, as Vladimir said, the lightning, the idea of the lightning. But when it haven't happened like this, the next level was the landing operation tried to capture the city of Kyiv. It also didn't work well because of the last 8 years, Ukrainian armed forces been preparing, training and modernizing. So they were ready to fight. But then when these losses started from the Russian side, what being chosen, it is the use of the heavy weapons, first of all, missiles and bombardment of the cities, of the civilian objects. And we can see it not only about Mariupol, these awful videos and the tragedies of what is happening there are now all around the international media. Just the recent bomb of the dramatic theater where 200 right. people been hiding and it's been airbombed, all people died.
Yeah.
But also let's look to the city of Kharkiv that is completely destroyed.
Okay.
Let's look to the 100 Indeed. Hospitals, 300 schools, and all other civilian objects around the country.
Indeed. Hannah, I just want to ask you, just to move the conversation forward a little bit, because we are aware of the different reports on the ground in Ukraine. As Nigel said, there are fears of what steps Russia might take next to unblock this campaign and perhaps force Ukraine to make concessions at the negotiating table because the two sides are talking. What is Ukraine prepared to concede? Would Ukraine be willing to cede any territory, for example, in order to gain a ceasefire with Moscow?
No, as for now, if we speak about the territory that Russians tried to control after 24th of February, unfortunately, I don't see the screen what map you've been showing, but I can assume that is the same map that I saw in other of your shows. So that is not the whole territory, that territory that the Russian Federation is controlling. They're controlling predominantly the roads around there. Mm-hmm. From regional centers, only one, Kherson, being occupied as for now, that is on the south near Crimea. In other territories, the Russians are bombing, but they are not controlling completely and they didn't occupy the cities themselves. So that's why, as for now, Ukraine cannot surrender or capitulate or give some of the territories because they are still not controlled by the Russian Federation.
Okay,
and
Vladimir.
As we see in some of the places, like from Mykolaiv, we're even moving them further. Still, it is the issue with Donetsk, Lugansk, and Crimea, the territories that have been occupied by the Russian Federation earlier
okay.
due to the 2014 events. And here I understand that one of the compromises can be to return back to the negotiations pre-February 2022, when we've been just discussing the future of Donetsk and Lugansk cities.
Okay, Vladimir, would Russia consider some of these concessions? What would it take for Russia to stop this war today?
Let me just direct our discussion in some other direction. I mean, that regarding these concessions. I think that at the end of the day, both sides who are worrying with each other, whatever you name it, could be that both sides should give give concessions and should productively work towards the peace, peaceful settlement. So I think that the situation which you are asking before the 24th of February is not realistic for the moment because the situation is completely different. So I mean that probably, this is my assumption, probably to reach a peaceful peaceful settlement,
okay.
Ukraine should negotiate the giving the independence or just
okay.
to recognize the Donetsk and Lugansk and Crimea as a part of Russia. And Russia should continue on these conditions
okay,
to give
briefly,
their own compromises.
Nigel, briefly, Nigel, you have the last word. What choices does Russia face now?
Putin is all in on this war. He's committed a great deal of military and political capital to it. The only thing that will stop him continuing it is if he reaches a conclusion that it's more risky to carry on the war than it is to stop it. He is unfortunately far from that situation right now, despite the costs that he has incurred on the battlefield and that sanctions will impose on him at home. And that's why the West has displayed this unprecedented degree of unity. The final point I'd make is, I'm sorry, there's absolutely no doubt whatsoever that Russia is deliberately targeting civilians in large numbers now. They are no longer confident they can defeat Ukrainian forces. They are trying to coerce Ukraine into making concessions by hurting large and killing large numbers of innocent people. This is siege warfare in the 21st century.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for a very dynamic conversation. Thank you, Hanna Shaletz, Vladimir Sotnikov and Nigel Gould-Davis. Thank you. And thank you for watching. You can always watch this program again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can, of course, also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Fully Batibo, and the whole team here in Doha, thanks for watching. Bye for now.